2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back.
Hey, everyone. J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce. Another one of these Baseball America prospect organizational deep dives. Talking about the Chicago Cubs today. Jeff does the Cubs list for us. You can see that in the Baseball America Prospect Handbook, which we are shipping the digital edition of now if you order from us. You can see that at baseballamerica.com, where we have the Cubs top prospects list up. And you can see that all through the season, as we update it all through the season. Jeff, welcome, you know, back to the show. We are together doing this all the time. Yeah. But as we talk about the Cubs, kind of diving into this, I do look at this and say, if I'm a Cubs fan, I'd probably be a little bit frustrated with how the last 5-6 years have gone, but it does feel like that brighter times may be ahead. Does it feel like that this is a team that kind of has bottomed out and is now close to being able to ready to compete again?
Yeah, it does feel like, you know, they've sort of finally turned the page from, you know, the championship window under Madden with Bryant and Javi Baez and Contreras and Schwarber and all those guys. Obviously, you know, none of them on the team any longer. And I thought that the team, you know, aggressively tried to make moves this offseason in order to improve the roster, maybe shed themselves of some Cody Bellinger as well. I thought they did pretty well there. And I think that, you know, around a lot of the signings and, you know, some of the remaining veteran talent that sticks on this team, they do have a really fun, exciting young core and some pretty good positional depth just outside the major league level in AAA and even AA.
That's like right now, if you said like my questions, I think we both like this farm system. We like the number of close to the majors prospects. We love that they've actually already produced a couple of those. I do want to kind of dive into that first. This is the team that Pete Crow Armstrong, you know, emerged, I would say, last year. You see with his defense that it's, we always talk about high floor players, and Pete Crow Armstrong, I feel like he's going to be a high floor player for years to come, because the center field defense is elite enough to make that the case. They traded for Michael. They traded prospects to bring in Michael Bush last year. Michael Bush has kind of, I would say, now become a regular and kind of an anchor, a cornerstone guy, even if I don't think he's not a star you're going to build around, but you need guys like Michael Bush who are going to give you regular production, that 3-3.5 war type player that you need several of those in the lineup to deepen the lineup. You got, you know, him. You've got also Miguel Amaya, who kind of somewhat has fit in their, you know, they're at their catching situation. And then they've also produced some pitchers, Javier Assad, Ben Brown, who made kind of a solid, I would say, kind of rookie season last year. There's some pieces here. And then they obviously went out and traded to bring in Kyle Tucker and had the prospect depth to do so without a ton of pain on their end. But when you look at the big picture of this, is, could you say like that the Cubs are really kind of now a farm system juggernaut, or is it more like they're producing at a level like that you would expect an organization to, especially one that has kind of gone through some leaner times?
Yeah, I don't think it's wrong, especially when you consider they're probably one of the premier franchises in Major League Baseball, just in terms of their market size, the size of their fan base, not only locally, but nationally. The expectations since the World Series, I think, have also changed. So I think, you know, when you look at this system, there's certainly some kudos for finding and identifying particularly positional talent over the last couple of years, not only in the draft, but also via trade and in the international market. So, you know, they've done well in a few different areas. But I think that, you know, with the trade of Cam Smith and, you know, maybe some questions around the guys within that top 10, it probably falls outside of the top 10 systems now for me, where I think a year ago, they were probably a little bit closer to that, but they have had some development success stories, et cetera. So kind of long answer short. Yeah, I think it's what you would anticipate from an organization that has the resources and is also fairly analytical and progressive in terms of their approach to player acquisition, that you would anticipate that they would have at least a decent farm system. It wouldn't be in the bottom third unless they graduated a bunch of players, really.
of this group they have, of the young guys they have, who's the cornerstone though? That, again, if you said is there a potential future star here? We'll get to the minor league side in a minute, but on this that's already on the big league roster, do you think they have, like, again, they have, I would say, some solid regulars, but could Pete Crow Armstrong be that star? You know, is there a guy who's an all-star? Is there a 5+ WAR player on this roster among this group of young guys, or is it more of like these are nice solid pieces, but without kind of that a star potential?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, the question kind of comes down to there's maybe no super well-rounded 5-tool prospect in this system. There's no Dylan Cruz, right? But I do think you can look at the system. You can look at a player like Pete Crow Armstrong and say, yeah, it could be possible that in his peak seasons, he has a couple of 5 WAR years. I don't think it's going to be consistent unless the offense makes a pretty substantial jump to sort of above average offense as opposed to teetering around league average sort of offense. He did take some steps forward in the second half. I think that's great. If I had to place my chips on anybody, it would be one of two players that are in the minors now. One would be Matt Shaw.
We'll get to them. We want to look at what's in the big leagues first. So we'll get to them. Okay. That's a little foreshadowing here.
Certainly PCA, I think, would probably be, you know, your best bet among that lineup, as the rest of these guys all have a pretty substantial amount of time in the major leagues or a little bit older, like a Michael Bush or Nico Horner, who I think, frankly, probably won't be on this roster when we do this podcast a year from now.
So, I mean, like, that's the other thing I was going to say is that they had this group of guys who were kind of the next wave after the group that really did drive them to a World Series title. You know, we had the Kyle mm-hmm. Schwarbers, the Chris Bryants, and all those guys who really did emerge, and then boom, they win the World Series. And then it was the Ian Happs, down the road it was the Nico Horners. Mm-hmm. Those guys have had it a little bit rougher because a lot of their time there, their success has been during this kind of this bleaker period. They're getting a little bit older, but it does seem like, you know, we got Horner, you still have Dansby Swanson here and all. I guess what I'm kind of leaning to, like the addition of Kyle Tucker, like this is a division that has become more competitive. The Brewers have been consistently good. I think we have to say, even for, you know, through, let's just be honest, even though they have less resources, less financial wherewithal to be the dominant team of this division, when you compare them to the Cubs or the Cardinals, and the Brewers have been kind of the class of this division, I would say, in recent years. Does the Tucker, you know, now the Cubs have Tucker, does this feel like right now an 85-win team? More than that? Less than that? Is this a team that still needs to make another move or two, do you feel like, in 25 to really actually put themselves into division contention?
Yeah, I think if I'm a Cubs fan, I'm still clamoring for another trade to bring in another arm. They did sign Colin Ray. They signed Matthew Boyd. But I don't think you can necessarily consider those guys huge rotation upgrades. I do think they're pretty good at the top with Imanaga and Steele, who have had pretty good years over the last couple of seasons. But I do think you need another starter here. I think, you know, the bullpen certainly has been a point of contention for the last 2 years. And frankly, like, offensively, they have produced over the last couple of years. That's not really been the sticking point of why this team hasn't gotten over that 85 game or win hump. I think a lot of it has come down to the quality of pitching, and it's not just in the rotation, but, you know, also in the bullpen as well. And, you know, there are some players who they could supplement with in the short term, but not that many. And I think, like, you know, you're banking on young prospects to potentially come up and pitch quality innings for you, which is just really hard to bank on regardless of how good a pitcher is. It just takes some time to, you know, adapt to major league lineups. It's not something that we can replicate easily in a training environment like we could with hitters, where they can face a variety of major league arms in a traject machine. There's really no way to do that for pitchers. I think they need to acquire a few more arms. I would imagine that if the Nico Horner deal does come to fruition, ultimately it's going to be for some pitching that can supplement either the bullpen or the rotation, or maybe a little bit of both. I think that's ultimately where the blame lies as to why they haven't gotten over the hump the last few years in a division where they should compete.
This is the team that has not won 85 games since they were last in the playoffs. You know, you have to go back to 2018. They haven't been terrible. Like in recent years, they've been kind of just outside of the playoff contention, a few games out, but it's been, you know, they've had winning records, but they also haven't been a team that can even snag a third wild card spot. So it is kind of like they need to take another step forward. That we're here to talk about prospects. That's the perfect segue to do this, which is the first thing I'll ask you prospect wise. Okay. Is Cade Horton ready to help with that? We're going to dive into that right after this quick break.
When spring training arrives, major league teams know that they have to have depth. They have to have contingency plans. No major league team goes into the season planning to have five starters make all the starts. Being prepared for life and life's events is even more important, which is why I have life insurance through SelectQuote to protect my family's financial future. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience, helping over 2 million customers, including me, find over $700 billion in coverage since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal, one-size-fits-all policies that cost you more and cover you less. While SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and to be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work with carriers that can give you the same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to SelectQuote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote. They shop, you save. Get the right life insurance for you for less at SelectQuote.com/BA. Go to SelectQuote.com/BA today to get started. That's SelectQuote.com/BA.
So, Jeff, Cade Horton, you talk about their need for young pitchers to step up. You talked about also the difficulty of transitioning to the big leagues. But is Cade Horton, does he fit as a significant part of their plans for 25, or is that asking probably a little bit too much of him?
You know, I do think that there is, with Horton, an element of mystery. You know, he was injured last year. I think we can kind of throw out the production, the time that he was even healthy, as not necessarily being who Cade Horton is and the player that we saw for the year and a half prior to that. You know, as a lat injury, those can linger for a while. It was something that he then re-injured and re-aggravated again during his rehab, missing more time. So we don't know what's gone on in the background since then, right? We don't know if he's leaned in, is working with maybe a new changeup grip or something along those lines to really develop that third pitch. And I think that third pitch is ultimately, for me at least, the difference between sink or swim, you know, as a starter early in the major leagues. That it, you know, he's throwing the changeup about 10% of the time. We know the fastball is plus. We know that the slider is plus or double plus. These are both good pitches. He's definitely a two-pitch guy that can navigate lines. We have seen guys like Strider and others find success with that. But I do think in that environment, he needs that third pitch. He needs something else to sort of lean on. The fastball is not as good as Strider's. That's a big part of it, you know. So it's you really walk such a thin line when you're a two-pitch pitcher, particularly as a righty, with a breaking ball as your second pitch. So, you know, I think that changeup and the development of that changeup and his ability to just consistently land it in counts where it's needed. He doesn't have to make it a dominant pitch, but a 45 or a 50 changeup that has, you know, around an average strike rate and zone rate, I think would go a long way just in terms of solidifying him as a starter. He certainly has the body. He has the athleticism. He has the fastball and the slider combination. But, you know, even in this day and age where there's so many starters that pitch like relievers, I am still a little concerned about that. And then I think you can kind of add on another concern for starting is durability. Guys that pitch a lot of innings over the course of collegiate baseball, pro baseball, typically are guys that stay healthier and pitch more innings in the major leagues. He doesn't have a long track record for a prospect that's ranked this highly. I mean, there's even high school prospects who probably might have as many quality innings from the same draft at this point against, you know, upper level competition as Horton does. So I think that's the biggest concern from a talent perspective. there's certainly like the foundational pieces are there for him to make that jump and help them. It's just how much has he improved in the last year?
And that is the other question that's, I think, a fair one to ask, which is, let's say that everything goes well for him. The other question is, just how many innings are you going to feel comfortable getting out of Cade Horton? As you mentioned, there's just not a whole lot of, even going back to college because of, injuries and all that, there's just not a whole lot of track record where you say, okay, he has 123 pro innings. He has 54 college innings. That's not a lot for a guy, that's basically a front of the rotation starter type workload for a season. In Cade Horton's case, that's what we're talking about for basically the last, the entirety of his 4/5 year, COVID college / pro career. There's not a lot of innings durability that's been demonstrated yet. Doesn't mean he's not going to have it going forward, but it does also mean you're probably not talking about saying, oh, we're just writing Cade Horton in for 150 innings next year, this upcoming year, because Cade Horton hasn't thrown 150 innings as a pro.
Or in a season ever. I don't think
ever.
Yeah. I mean, he's legitimately never done that. So, yeah. And I mean, I believe he was a draft eligible sophomore who was injured because he was a 2020 high school guy. So missed 21, comes back in 22. And even that college season, and following it at the time, if you remember, it was like the first half of the season, he wasn't even a consideration. And then the stuff ticked up, the performance really ticked up, and down the stretch into the college tournament, et cetera, he was great. And I think, we saw a little bit of it last year, especially two years ago, especially in the lower minors, but him missing another year with an injury is definitely concerning. Especially when there's only probably so much time on any Tommy John surgery that you're probably looking 7-8 years down the road for a potential another elbow injury.
Right. So that's kind of, but Cade Horton is, I would say, the Cubs' best pitching prospect and also the one most likely to, you could throw Brandon Bird, so I think would be the other one who may fit into the plans in 25. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think he's somebody that could come up and provide back in innings and probably be pretty quality. It's kind of hit or miss on how those guys are going to, kind of assimilate to pro ball kind of out the gate.
Major league ball,
out the gate. You're looking at somebody where it's not outrageous stuff. It's solid stuff with good command that he hits his spots, which I think gives you a higher floor. You probably get through two innings in your debut. But I do think this is somebody that, probably needs some major league development to sort of get to that next step if he's going to take a step forward from a back-end guy to more of a mid-rotation guy. So at this point, I think you're more looking at an innings eater that's better than something that you could grab off of the scrap heap.
This gets way more interesting when we start talking about their close to the majors position prospects.
Very much.
This is where the Cubs do get really interesting here. And I think we both kind of like a number of these guys. But okay, I'll start with it this way. We saw PCA, we saw Michael Bush, who's really a Dodgers prospect who just stepped right into the lineup for the Cubs after the trade. We see Miguel Amaya. Who's next up? Who's the guy who is there someone here who you look at and say, I know the answer. I'm just putting it on a tee for you. But there's a guy here who we can say right now, barring something unexpected, expect to see him in the lineup pretty much from day one, I would imagine, in the infield.
I think it's Matt Shaw. I think that, when you asked the question before, and technically maybe you could throw him, he's listed in a lot of places as their potential starting everyday third baseman. But I think that, of anybody that's young on the major league roster, I think Shaw has the most upside to produce. He's not going to be Kyle Tucker, of course, but that's a totally different conversation. I think that this guy could have all-star seasons. I think that he's a winner. Somebody I have some history with, he's been a winner since he was, in high school. Showed that on the Cape, was, Cape Cod League MVP, really ran the table as the best player that summer in the Cape. From end to end, won a championship with Bourne, had a big homer in that championship game as well. Won Big Ten Conference Player of the Year. He was really good as a pro up to this point, made it up to AAA, hit. There's just not a lot of questions. And I think the thing with Shaw is he's an exciting offensive player who can hit a home run and steal a base and come up with a big hit or a big walk in a tough spot. That he does a lot of things really well. He's a below average defender. Third base is not his natural position. There's probably going to be some questions regarding the arm strength at third base. Ultimately, I always kind of felt like he'd fit best at second. He has leaned into learning the third base position, and there was some growth this year as a defender there. So I think the biggest questions for Shaw really come on the defensive side of the ball. As an offensive player, I do think that he's pretty much ready for prime time at this point and could come out the gate and produce. And is the kind of player that will make adjustments and figure things out if he does struggle. And won't, you know, it won't kill his confidence. He's just not that kind of person.
You mentioned, obviously, that there is still the possibility of a Nico Hoerner trade. If that happened, I mean, do you think that this is something where right now he's the third baseman of the very near future, but at the same time, depending, that's kind of partly because of kind of the current roster construction?
Well, JJ, it depends how much they like our Rule 5 friend, Gage Workman.
Sorry. nothing against Gage Workman, but you're not penciling him as third base.
They don't have another third baseman on the roster. You know, their two infield backups are Vidal Brujan and Gage Workman at this point. And Workman certainly, like, I don't think there's any questions for us that
he can play defensively.
He's gonna be a 60 defender at third base, maybe better. I think I'm even being conservative there. He's gonna give him great defense in the infield. We have no idea if he's going to hit. He finally hit for the first time as a pro last year in Double A. And there's a pretty significant difference between hitting in Double A and hitting in the major.
Especially, and again, we're not rooting against him. Hey, no. I would love to see Gage Workman go out there and do it. But when you're in your third year of Double A, and that's when the light bulb goes on, and it's like, I've got the Eastern League. I have the Eastern League's number. There's a real big jump between that. Yeah. That wasn't something where he jumped to Double A and it's like hit the ground running. It was year one. It was really a struggle. Year two was a struggle. Year three, it all came together. That's a big jump from that to the big league. So again, like, yes, I do make clear Shaw's their third baseman right now. And even if they did, like, let's say trade Nico Hoerner, you're gonna have to make another move for Shaw not to be your third baseman just because you don't have a whole lot of other options. But exactly. I would assume, like, if this is the team that just traded for Kyle Tucker, I kind of wouldn't be shocked at all if he said, like, that Nico Hoerner's on this team all this year for that reason, because they just don't have a whole lot of other infield answers currently. Yeah. And that kind of leads, though, to the next question, which is, do they have other potential infield answers who could be arriving at some point this year?
I think there's some infielders. I guess the closest answer would be James Triantos at second base. And I will say Triantos in a lot of ways does what Hoerner does. They're similar players. What Triantos has grown into as a professional, he's gotten back to a little bit of that athleticism that was built coming out of high school in Virginia. We kind of didn't see that for the first couple of years. I will say in terms of his metrics, he was one of the best defensive infielders in the minor leagues last year. Now, metrics are metrics. But when you talk to some of the coaches, you talk to opposing scouts, there is more confidence that he's at least above average defensively at second base. And, you know, as a guy who makes a lot of contact, does not strike out, keeps a tidy zone, and he's an excellent base stealer. Maybe not as fast as Hoerner, but instinct-wise, in terms of his jumps, how he reads the pitcher, how he uses some of the new rules changes to his advantage, I think are going to translate to the big leagues, where he is a guy who you could project for a 280 average and 25 stolen bases and pretty good second base defense. So, you know, I don't know what the level of confidence is for the Cubs in Triantos in 25, but at the very least 26, I think that he is very easily a Hoerner replacement.
Did reach AAA at the end of last year, spent most of last year at AA. It doesn't, like, I would not in any way say the expectation is he's going into spring training saying, hey, this guy's ready, but it's not also very implausible at all to say he goes back to AAA, good first half of the season. You start to say, hey, if there's an injury, if there is a trade, whatever it is, that he works into that discussion. But it really is kind of, really, it's more, if I was going to pick, obviously Shaw's the guy who you're not writing him into the lineup in ink right now, but that pencil, you can kind of bear down pretty well. You're not thinking that you're going to erase his name from the lineup. They really need him to step into the lineup almost from day one.
Mm-hmm.
Is Owen Casey the other guy who's knocking on the door the most? The guy who could, if again, maybe it's not opening day, but could absolutely fit into this lineup at some point in 25?
Well, and I think it's unfortunate because I think you look at Casey and you look at Kevin Alcantara. Alcantara, of course, debuted last year. They're good players. They're players that I think at this point, particularly with Casey having spent a full season in AAA and had some success and is a pretty good defender, he's somebody that I think you can point to and say, I think feel like Casey, for a lot of other organizations, might be a big league guy starting an opening day in 25. The opportunities aren't there unless there's, of course, an injury. But when you look at the outfield situation with PCA, Kyle Tucker, who they just traded for, Ian Happ, who's been one of their best hitters over the last couple of years, there's not really a lot of opportunity for Casey. And I really think at this point, he needs to be challenged by major league pitching. So with that being said, I get the feeling that he might be a player where if there's an injury or something happens, a team might seek out Casey as a potential trade target, because he's somebody that could start every day. And I just don't know how much it's going to help to have him spend another, you know, see another 350 plate appearances in AAA at this point, where I think he is ready for a big league job. So in terms of the skills, it's a really good player. He's a good defender. He's got a good arm. He moves well in a corner outfield spot. You're not going to play him in center, but that's fine. He mashes. I thought that in terms of the underlying metrics, as well as the feedback, as well as the eye test on video, he made a concerted effort to become a better contact hitter this year and to become a little bit more aggressive at times. I think that was good and bad, but the outlier power is still there. And if he can kind of find a happy medium between a little more contact and the on-base ability he'd showed previously with that power, he could be a player that maybe pushes for some, you know, I don't think five WAR is necessarily possible, but 3.5 to 4 WAR years consecutively through a good chunk of his career, because he is valuable on both sides of the ball.
You mentioned Alcantara as well. Does he kind of run the risk of kind of, again, like you said, you just laid out, this is the team that now, having traded for Tucker, has a starting lineup of outfielders. And it does kind of feel like that if you're looking at who could, if Tucker went down or if Happ went down, I think it would say safe to say that Casey kind of fits as, hey, we're looking for a bopper to kind of replace that guy. Alcantara's got a little bit more questions about the bat. I feel like that's why I'm saying like that. I feel like Casey would be the first of those options.
And he's also only had 35 games in AAA versus Casey, who played 127. And I do think that matters. I mean, the difference between AAA and the majors has probably never been greater, especially when there's some benefit to hitters in AAA based on the strike zones and all the technology that they use throughout the season. I think Alcantara is a player who, by the way, is 22 until July 12th. So, you know, last year was technically his age 21 season. He still has enough runway that if you spent a year or majority of a year in AAA, I don't think it's hurting Alcantara's development. He just had to be added to the 40-man roster sooner.
Am I right in saying, though, like, when I look at this farm system right now, I really like it still. I think it's still solid. I do feel like it's a step below what I thought about this time last year. And some of that's kind of understandable. They graduated PCA. You know, they traded away Zahir Hope. They traded away Jackson Ferris. Like, those are two. That this farm system would look a lot better, obviously, if it had those two guys in it as well. But is it a step below where it was at this time last year?
It's tough to say, because I do think that, you know, they made a trade where, you know, getting rid of Johnson, I think kind of hurt some of the pitching depth because he's a very interesting arm. You wrote him up for the Rays. You know, a couple of those guys, Biggie as well. I think that hurt some of the pitching depth. I do think some of the names in the 11 to 20 range are better. It's a lot of position players. There were a couple of breakouts that are included in that area. A guy like Jonathan Long, who we've talked about a lot toward the end of the season. RoboScout and Dylan talked about him a lot from a fantasy perspective. We talked about him in the AFL. He's an interesting player who now slides in at 10 now that Cam Smith was traded. I do think some of the international signees, they have a bunch of middle infielders that are kind of lower profile prospects at this point. I think there's maybe the potential for a couple of those guys to really bust out. They're tooled up. You know, there's guys with power and speed within that group that I do think there's maybe a little bit more depth. But I think the way that we're viewing this top 10, the shines off a few of these guys. There's a little more prospect fatigue with Cade Horton than there was a year ago. There's maybe a little more prospect fatigue with Casey or Alcantara than there was a year ago. I think Shaw's been an ascending talent. There's nothing negative I think he can say about him. You know, Cam Smith is gone. So it's tough. I think it feels different. I don't know talent-wise that it's any worse.
The other one I can't believe we haven't mentioned yet, because you and I both love talking about him to each other, is Moises Ballesteros, who he's a catcher. And there's still, he's a catcher, and I would say there's a catcher with a question mark to some extent, which is always adds a little bit time to the development. But I guess my first question with him is why should fans be excited about Moises Ballesteros? And then I'll follow up with, can he catch? I'll just ask them both at the same time.
Yeah, I think we both saw it in person. When you talk to hitting coaches and folks who are working on the hitting side, it feels like consistently the feedback that you get on Ballesteros is tremendous. It's like, this guy does everything well. He can hit the ball with authority to all fields. He keeps a tidy zone. The bat to ball skills and the barrel accuracy is something that consistently comes up, whether you're talking to folks within the organization that have worked with Ballesteros in the cage, or just, you know, outside evaluators who have taken a good sample in on him. The big question is the body, which, to his credit, has improved. If we can tell the story, when we saw him at the prospect pad, I think we were both a little taken back by how much thinner he was than we had anticipated, just based on watching video. I mean, I've seen a lot of this guy on tape. It's more of a Francisco Alvarez kind of body as opposed to like an Alejandro Kirk kind of body. He put some work in there in season to tighten up, and he made a big difference. The catching is still not great. And catching in general in the major leagues, there's a lot of elements to it. Handling a pitching staff, you know, knowing all this. I don't know in terms of his communication skills, how bilingual he is either. And that's all part of it too, is communicating with your pitching staff. Some of that with, you know, with the PCOM and things like that have gotten a little bit easier, of course. But still, I think there's some elements that he still needs to come along. If he was a fringe average third baseman, he might be the guy that's playing third base this year and not Shaw, and they're moving Horner to move Shaw to second base. The bat's there, and he's so young and so advanced as a hitter that I do think it's a major leaguer. I think it's an everyday regular, maybe an above average regular, but it may end up being more first base DH, and he catches sometimes. And I it's tough. It's tricky. It's tricky to know how all that stuff works out, because there's no element of his game in terms of throwing, blocking, framing that grades out as something that's even average. So that is a concern. And, you know, of all the positions on the field, and I'd even argue in all of pro sports, you can argue the defensive value of a catcher is huge, because almost every play he's touching the ball. There's no one else you can really say that about in the game. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's say that the answer is he's not a catcher. It just doesn't get good enough to do that. Is the bat good enough? I mean, then he's really a first baseman probably, right? Like, that's first base DH, yeah. Right? Is it good enough for that?
I think so. I think because of what you look at the underlying exit velocities, he hits the ball hard. It's really a matter of just adding a little bit more loft And he has enough contact skill that you can sacrifice that. But it's not to say that he doesn't hit for power at all. It's not like, you know, he's a purely average play. So I think he has the combination of skills and that really high level hit tool to keep that job and hold it for years. And I think ultimately, when you look at the guys that make it at that position, at that role, it's not just power. There has to be a high level hit tool there too. You know, you don't see a lot of DHs that are striking out at 30% of the time. It's more guys that have some positional value and they can eat that, you know?
And as a catcher, like, even if, like you said, it's a first base slash DH slash catcher, there is still some value to that. If you can pick your spots and you can say, like, okay, we don't ever want him to even be our number two catcher, let's just say theoretically, but you can be the number three. And then if there's an injury, hey, we're having to play Ballesteros twice this week or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the kind of a situation where that's an easier sell roster construction wise than it is if you said he's a first base DH and you really don't want to play him at first base. That roster construction is like, what? How are we going to make this fit? You know, he's a fascinating dude because he said also he's young enough that I would say the other thing I would say about catching is there's so much to catching in the big leagues, but it also is the position that you can improve the most at with desire and work. Of almost anywhere, because there are attributes to it. Some of it you either have or you don't, the flexibility, the core strength, all that. But there's other attributes, how you handle a low pitch, how you handle a pitch on the corner, how you catch a pitch at the top of the zone, that can be trained, that can be taught. How you work with pitchers is something that part of that is you just need the reps. If you have the desire, if you are willing to embrace the grind that is catching, there are things that you can consistently get better at. And you can see guys who do that, who get there. He has the bat now, you know, just can he add the other aspects to it? He's a fascinating guy to watch. That leads me to my final question for you, Jeff, which is, okay, we're hanging out mainly in the top 10 here. But as you said, this is an organization that has some interesting guys outside of the top 10. Who is a lower ranked prospect? A prospect that if you're not a diehard Cubs fan, or a diehard Baseball America reader, you may not have as much knowledge of. Who's a guy who really kind of stands out to you as someone to watch?
There's a couple in that 11 to 20 range. But I think the one that really jumps out to me the most is Angel Cepeda. Signed in 23, he actually grew up in New Jersey and moved to the Dominican Republic prior to signing at 17. It was $1 million bonus back in 23. Had a pretty good showing in the DSL, was a DSL All-Star. He then hit 298, 383, 428 with a decent walk rate over 56 games in ACL. So when I look at a player like this, when I dug in on the video and the data, pretty good. There's underlying power there. I think some of that slugging will improve. But he has a good balance of being sort of moderately aggressive with above average bat to ball ability. And when you have that combination of skills and some power, I think it allows you to grow into different types of hitters. And what I mean in the sense is, like, you're not so extreme one end or so extreme the other end. You can get a little bit more passive and it might, you know, turn into more production. You can get a little bit more aggressive if you get too passive, and you can find success there. And he can play some shortstop. You know, it's above average arm. Played multiple positions this year. With any of these guys, I think, you know, if they're not an outstanding defender, you kind of wonder, all right, is he going to end up at second base or third base? Probably not a shortstop long term. But they have a bunch of these really interesting young outfielders, the infielders in him, a guy like Pedro Ramirez, Ronnie Cruz, and Yahiel Melendez were, you know, a few that stuck out to me. Cruz and Melendez are a little bit more on the power and speed side with less advanced hit tools, where Ramirez and Cepeda are a little bit better hit tools with some power projection remaining.
Those are some names to know. This is what we love to do. It's prospect season here at Baseball America. If you enjoy this, you definitely will enjoy the Baseball America Prospect Handbook. Just go to baseballamerica.com and you can order yours now. Also, if you enjoy this, just go to baseballamerica.com. And if you don't, if you do have a subscription already, thank you. We appreciate it. That's what allows us to do this. But if you don't, you can join the many who do by getting a Baseball America subscription to our website. And that means you're going to have scouting reports on all these guys that we're talking about. We do that. We update them during the season multiple times. We update our top 100 multiple times during the season. You're going to know about the prospects first. You're going to know about them more if you go to baseballamerica.com. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.